Hi, I'm W2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
John Peterson, playing the MC in Cabaret at the Kennedy Center.
Cabaret at the Kennedy Center, now through August 6th. Thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Awesome. Now, anyone who's seen either the show or the movie, you know, knows that the MC is a huge part. We all remember it as Joel Grey, right? I know he won an Oscar. I'm pretty sure a Tony as well. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a legendary role, and now you got to step into those shoes.
I know, big
What's
shoes.
That like?
It's, you know what? I just go the other way, and I try not to... have him in my mind, really. I just try to be honest as to who I am, as the character who I, in my soul, I think he is. So I try not to consider Joel Grey too much, even though it's a giant looming over you, you know. But he was so amazing. But I'm not going to talk about him.
Right. Well, when did you encounter that, though? Was it the film, or did you see it on Broadway?
First time I saw the movie, first time. I think I was 14 or something, and I went to an all-night movie fest at the National Film Theatre in London, where I come from.
Oh, nice.
And saw Cabaret for the first time, and I was just, it was terrifying, actually, for a 14-year-old.
It's scary. Yeah, I mean, you think a musical, but it's pretty dark, too.
It's dark. Because of the rise of fascism, which is what it's about in the 1929, 1930 Berlin. Yeah. But it's this really witty, funny musical with this dark undertone, which makes it so fascinating to watch. I mean, it's just this piece of theater, and now because they've taken the original 1960s production and they've added some of the songs they put in for the movie for Liza Minnelli.
Like Money Money,
and Maybe This Time. And they've fleshed out the characters where they couldn't in the 60s because we were only 20 years away from World War II. Right. We were still a little buttoned up.
It was a little fresh, and we were a little,
We were. So they've taken the intent of Christopher Isherwood, who wrote the original books, and we've found the truth of the characters, who we can bring it out more, you know. The Kit Kat Club was a seedy dive in Backstreet Berlin, and there were so many of these at the time where people could go and point at the politicians, the fascists who were up and coming then, and laugh at them and be sexually free on stage. Not that we're sexually free on stage, but it's hinted at, you know. So it's a very honest production, and you get to know the characters and you get to really empathize with them. And so the payoff at the end, when it all, you know, ends, is mind-blowing for the audience. They come out with their jaws on the floor. Yeah, and some people come expecting to see
show tuny,
which they get. Right. But then it sort of has this wonderful layered twist to it, which
it's like
is
like a Wicked, not Wicked the show, but you know, it's a Wicked kind of sensibility about it.
Yes, it's so fascinating. Yeah, you know, you just as a piece of theater, it's like nothing that's ever been done. I mean, it's just it has this and that and that and that and that, and the layers build up until you just, as an audience member, you really, at the end of it, it stays with you. You know, I think it makes you a better person seeing the show in a way, because it teaches you not to judge other people, because the results are.
Awesome. Well, before we dive too far into it, we'll circle back to a lot of things you hit on. I want to come back around to, but before we dive too far in, let's pretend that someone's listening to this that's totally unfamiliar with it, or maybe saw it a long time ago. Given like sort of the premise, set the stage, where we are, you know, what the Kit Kat Club is, all that sort of, who Sally Bowles is, all that.
Okay, great. So you've got it's Berlin, Germany, in between the two world wars, 1930.
Rise of Nazi Germany, basically.
Just at the
little
point,
leading up to it.
Yes, yeah, yeah, right. It's just about to happen, really. They're just about to come along.
The vacuum and the desolation that led to that, I guess.
Well, yes, because after World War I, Germany was just ruined, you know. And out of that came escape fantasy, which, you know, involved sexual liberation, freedom, going, just more honesty, really. And artistic freedom. And then the Nazis came in sort of 1930 and started to clamp down on that. We want to, you know, they were the answer to everything. The economy would be rejuvenated. Germany would be not ruined anymore. But there had to be somebody to blame, and that was the Jews. You know, we all know the story of the time, and this is set right then. So it's the story of an American writer, Cliff Bradshaw, young writer who comes to Berlin for inspiration for a novel. He wants to write about something. He's tried London and Paris, and he just can't find anything. And then so then he ends up in the Kit Kat Club in this seedy place and meets Sally Bowles, who is a young girl from England who comes to Berlin when nobody knows her to try to be something fabulous, which she...
Divine decadent.
She wants to be divinely decadent, yes. Which actually, that line isn't in the... It's only in the movie. Yeah. But
it's funny how you confuse all of them together.
Exactly,
now,
but she still paints her fingernails green. Right. So the two meet, fall in love. Cliff is bisexual, which was only vaguely hinted at originally, but now we can just say it.
Does he know that at the start of the play, or does he discover that?
He doesn't know. He knows as much as anybody who is bisexual, right. who is in denial, who hasn't really confronted it yet.
Right.
He meets Sally, but then he also meets all the cute boys at the Kit Kat Club, and he meets, you know, he discovers himself in this journey. And Sally is trying to be a legend in her own mind, and she's...
I love that, in her own mind.
Yes, and she is just a poor, deluded kid, but fascinating, you know, in her own unfascinating way. Right. And the two come together, and it's their story. It's also that love story is also paralleled with another love story of the owner of the boarding house in which they live, Fräulein Schneider, who's, you know, in her 60s, has seen World War I, she's seen good times and bad times, and the local fruit market seller, Herr Schultz, and who is one of her lodgers. So it's their romance, which is a beautiful old Germany, older generation romance, coupled with what they face with the rise of fascism. So we've got all this going on, and we get to see how it evolves and how it ends. And it's so beautifully, there's not a word. Joe Masteroff wrote the book of the play. Christopher Isherwood wrote the book.
Yeah, give us the iterations again. So it was a 60s Broadway musical.
Yes, which was based on the books of Christopher Isherwood, all about his, because he was that young writer. That was his story. I Am a Camera was basically the cabaret story.
Gotcha.
And then Joe Masteroff wrote the libretto, which is the book of the musical. Mm-hmm. And he came back with this revival and updated it for us. And there's not a word which is spared. There's not a word superfluous. It's just beautifully written. It feels like everything. There's so many quotable lines in the book of this musical. It's almost like Shakespeare. It's just, I think in 300 years, cabaret will still be being performed.
Do you have a quotable line on the tip of your tongue that you always, when you're sitting there watching it from the side, you're like, oh, that's a good one.
My gosh. Yes. Governments come, governments go. How much longer can we wait? Which Herr Schultz says when Fräulein Schneider is saying, I can't marry you, things are too crazy right now, and you're a Jew. I have to think of my boarding house, they'll take it away from me. And that's his reply. But there are just so many throwaway lines which are just so beautifully written, you know. I'll go out, I'll take long, invigorating walks. You know, just things like that are so... beautifully written. It's a feast.
Yeah.
It's a total feast.
Who plays your Sally Bowles? And we all remember Liza Minnelli, but who is in it this time in this direction?
Lee Ann Larkin, who is a wonderful actress, singer from, I saw her in the revival of Gypsy 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. She was big baby June, like grown up baby June, and she was fantastic in that show. So she is such a knockout. The voice, so powerful. And her acting is so tender and beautiful, and she's gorgeous. I mean, just an amazing Sally Bowles. We're very lucky to have her.
That's so great. And then for you said earlier in the interview, you know, when we were talking about, you know, not comparing off of Joel Grey, you said you have an idea of who you think he is in his soul. So
Absolutely.
Who is the MC in his soul? What do you mean by that?
Well, it's such a complex character because he not only is the MC of this tawdry little club in Backstreet Berlin. And so, you know, he's a guy who works there and he creates some of the numbers and he's kind of in charge backstage, although he's not in charge of the club. He answers to Max, who runs the club. But he also survives. You know, he's a survivor just like all the Kit Kat girls and boys. They'll do anything to survive in this terrible time, whether it's selling drugs or selling food or stealing or prostitution. You know, you did what you had to do. And that's another great line in the show that Fräulein Schneider says, one does what one must.
Absolutely.
Right. But he's also represents, he takes this audience through the show. He's the MC for us. Uh-huh. And he also represents fate, you know, turning the pages of the story as it unravels. He's there for that. He represents the Nazis. He represents the people who are the victims of the Nazis. He represents the Jews. He represents the character is endlessly complex.
Yeah.
So whatever you come away from the show thinking he is, he is.
You're probably right. That and a lot more.
And a lot more besides, yeah.
That's great. Let's go some into the music. You kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but remind us, you know, who wrote it and some of the big numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's the title song.
There's the title song, Cabaret.
Money, Money.
Money, 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 which was written for the movie. The score was written by Kander and Ebb, who are the, along with Jerry Herman, I think, the greatest musical theater writing team. I mean, you know, there are others, of course. There are
Own it, damn it.
Right, own it. They wrote, oh gosh, now I won't be able to think of one. Floor of the Red Menace, The Rink. The Act for Liza Minnelli, Cabaret, Chicago, of course, which everyone is in front of everyone's minds right now. Kiss of the Spider Woman, so many, and Steel Pier, amazing songs. So the songs in the show are Cabaret, Maybe This Time, which was in the movie Cabaret, and they brought into this. Money, 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 again, in the movie Cabaret, they brought in for this. If You Could See It Through My Eyes, which is my favorite number in the show.
Why is that?
Because it has a twist at the end. Yeah. It starts off very lovely, and then it stabs you at the end. It's fantastic, genius. Willkommen, which is the opening number, is kind of well-known as well. What other songs? So many, so many.
Why in your interpretation, in the big line, life is a cabaret, old chum? Explain why that is.
Because
explain the analogy to
everybody knows it as a jolly little number that hasn't seen the show, and so you take it at face value. Life is a cabaret. Life is a party. Let's just enjoy it. Okay, that's one way of taking it.
Or
life is just a party. So don't torture yourself. Don't take it too seriously because you're going to be dead soon anyway. You know, it all ends up in a box.
Right.
So. Sometimes this world is just crappy.
Yeah.
So just have a good time. Don't give in to it. That's kind of what it is. It's a life is a cabaret, and a cabaret can also be dark, and cabaret can also be awful.
Can it also be all the world's a stage where people are putting on, and when they're putting on too much, watch
absolutely
out.
Yes. Act as if. It also tells you life is a performance. You know, get out there and play the game, because if you don't play the game, you're gonna get nowhere.
Absolutely.
You know, just
What do we see? You talk about this, you know, the CD nightclub and the Kit Kat Club. What do we see visually, and how much of that is, do you think, influenced by the original, and how much is Bob Fosse? Because, God, a brilliant.
There was an influence by him definitely in this production.
But a lot of people might not remember, he won Best Director over Francis Ford Coppola for The Godfather.
Right, like, exactly.
The visuals in that thing was amazing, the direction. Yeah. But we're also now talking about a revival, right, which was Sam Mendes?
Sam Mendes did the revival with Rob Marshall. Yes, of course.
Chicago.
This is a revival of that revival. Yeah. It's basically the same.
How much of all of those visual elements come into this, you think?
All of them come together.
What do we see?
You see the original production, which is the 1960s production, and then came the movie, of course. So our production has taken a little of both. It's taken Bob Fosse's innovative stripping down of the elements, the costumes and stuff. It's taken that. It's a very black show. A lot of the costumes are black, and it's very to the point and sharp, you know. And it's a little racy, the costumes, you know, sort of lingerie. And you see a lot of me. I'm practically naked for a lot of it, which is, you know, fine.
He's right now. You just can't see it on the radio.
Yeah, I'm completely naked.
The beauty of radio. Just kidding.
Yeah. So you get a suggestion of, they go about as far as you can without it going too far.
Right.
And they never go too far. Yeah. But they go just far enough to maybe even offend some people, I hope. Because what is theater if it isn't going to offend some people and make them question the way they think?
Describe the movements and the choreography, too.
It's very influenced by Fosse, I think. Rob Marshall is one of my favorite director choreographers. And I worked with him on She Loves Me in London in 1994. And that's kind of how I got to do this, because he always said to me, you'd be right for this. And I'm like, well, I don't live in New York. So, and then I moved to New York and he got me. So I was lucky. He was very influenced by Bob Fosse. It's very sexy. It's very, you know, that sort of classic picture of Liza Minnelli on the cabaret chair with right. the stockings, and he's really gone there with the hat.
Yeah,
that whole stylized thing Rob Marshall has totally bought into beautifully, and it serves the piece and pushes it forward just beautifully. It's thrilling. It's thrilling to do as well as to watch. It's every night. I've been doing this show on and off since 1999. This version.
Yeah.
Not
where'd you first
not
do
not
it?
The whole time.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
of
every so often.
That's all he's done.
That's all I've done.
Since 1999.
But it comes up every so often. It's like the seventh time I've done this right. production. They've asked me to.
Always as the MC role? Or
yes, always. Oh, wow. I understudied initially. Norbert Leo Butz was the initial tour MC after Alan Cumming. And then when he left, they gave it to me. I was so lucky. And so I just love it. I love it. It never gets stale. Every night, sometimes you're exhausted. Like the eighth show of the week or the sixth show of the week, you are just, you don't know how you're going to be able to do the show, but you're never bored. Right. Boredom is never something that comes into it, which is almost unique in doing a show, because there'll always be the boredom windows of time that you work through in a long run. Not with this. It's every night you've got an important story to tell, an important statement to make about humanity, about not judging your fellow man, especially now. It's a politically strange time we're going through.
Yeah, let's go into that a little bit. Compare how it's...
okay,
you know,
yeah, if I can in D.C., I don't want to, you know, push the envelope if I'm not allowed to, but if I'm allowed to...
We have listeners of all political stripes, but I think we can handle this conversation.
Yes. Well, you know...
Because we got to see where every show fits into the now, you know.
It really does fit into now, because we don't really know what's going on, not just in America, with this extreme sudden shift to the right that we've taken.
Right.
Because of the problems we've been having with fundamentalists and of different religions, and the reaction to that is shift to the right, protect yourself, exclude minorities, blame that cyclone in Michigan on the gays because God said,
right.
It's just, you know, it's all just human nature, which to be a civilized society, that is what you fight.
Right.
You fight that tendency to blame minorities. So that's what we're going through now a little. Not just here, but in Europe too. That's what they went through after World War One in Germany. So the parallels are, you know, I hope we don't, the outcome isn't going to be the same. I think social media helps because we're all always aware of what's going on daily now. So I think it'll help to control this, I'm hoping.
And you know what else helps? Shows like this.
Shows like this.
That's Western Free Societies constantly being reminded through these great creative expressions, I think, is what will hopefully help us from dipping back into the...
I think it will. And because this musical is...
Or maybe we're just optimistic.
I don't know. I mean, they were optimists back then in the 30s that said, "It will governments come, governments go.
Right.
You know, it this will pass." That could never happen. It would never get to that. That's what we're saying now. And even I believe it will never get to that, but it could, you know, because power corrupts, you know, and it's human nature. We have to fight. As I said, being a civilized society or a civilized human being means fighting your tendency to be a narcissist, to be a racist, to be a judgmentalist, you know, to be an evangelical in any belief you have. This moderation is the key to civilization. Yeah.
Well, but all of this is why it's important for everyone to come out and see this. You know?
And it's so beautifully displayed here. It's a lesson beautifully taught, because the score, the acting, the lighting, the costumes, the story is so engaging. And so as an audience member, you just get drawn in from the moment it starts, and you're sucked into this world, and you don't want it to end, and it ends.
Yeah. And then you stagger out into the world.
With your jaw on the floor. Yeah. Questioning everything about your life.
you look around at everything. You're going to walk out of the Kennedy Center and be like, oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what good theater is all about. That's why theater was created back in the ancient Greeks, to make people think about themselves.
Absolutely. And you walk right out and you see the Watergate.
I know. Isn't that another layer added to the beauty of this whole thing?
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, in closing then, if our listeners have heard this and they're a little intrigued, why should they come out? What gets them out there?
If you go to a movie that you think is absolutely amazing and you tell all your friends and you can't, and you want to go again, you've had that experience. This is the experience you'll have when you come and see Cabaret. It will blow your head off. It'll blow your mind. It'll blow your soul.
That's Say no it. More. That's the perfect place to leave it. Thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate
it. Thank you for such a great interview.